Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to episode 3 of Razor Sharp Sports Network. It's been a few weeks, but I'm back. A lot has happened in the sports world lately. The most important aspect in life I value is time, so I'm not about to waste any of yours. And I'm going to get straight into it, man. And you know where we headed first. Yep, you guessed it. Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. Since the Olympic break, the Indiana Fever are 8-3 and currently sit at 19-18. For the first time since 2016, the Indiana Fever have clinched a playoff berth. The Fever actually play tonight against the Aces, who I do not want to see in the first round of the playoffs. But you all know why I'm here and why I'm talking about the Indiana Fever. Former Hawkeye legend Caitlin Clark. As of today, Friday, September 13th, she sits 37 points away from the rookie scoring record, 5 assists away for the WNBA assist record. One more game of 25 points and 10 assists would have her at the most ever in WNBA history. And 17 more threes she needs for the WNBA record in a season. She currently averages 19.1 points, 5.7 rebounds, 8.4 assists, and 1.3 steals. Easily Rookie of the Year. Easily first team all WNBA. Right now they sit 6th in the playoff position, currently set to play the Connecticut Sun if the season ended today. To be honest with you, I'd much rather play them than the Lynx, the Liberty, or the Aces. To me, the Connecticut Suns are very offensively deficient. I get they are one of the best, if not the best, defensive team in the W, but they struggle heavily to score, and I'm not sure if the game, if it gets close, they can have enough offensive firepower to hang with Caitlin and Kelsey, who's currently two of the most efficient guards in the league and two of the most efficient scorers in the league right now. I love Dejounte Carrington, a dog on the defensive side, but I'm not sure if her and Alyssa Thomas is enough offensively to go toe-to-toe with the Fever. DeWanna Bonner is a great scorer. She averages 16 a game right now, but she's also 37 years old. You wonder if that up-and-down play style starts to catch up with her at the end of the game. When the game does slow down. I do like the addition of Marina Mabry, but she is a liability on the defensive side, and she's a very streaky shooter. The Sun, who already struggles shooting the ball, can't really afford to have bad shooting nights when they're already a bad shooting team. And I'm sorry, I'm just not a believer in Alyssa Thomas. I think she's a hell of a defender, a great rebounder, but when the game slows down, she won't be able to affect the game offensively. She plays that Draymond role for the offense, but they don't have a Steph Curry and a Klay Thompson. So it's like, why does she have the ball right now? I think their offense kind of flows better when they have a Dejounte or Marina running the pick and roll, or they're running post-ups for DeWanna. It'll be very interesting to see if that is the first round matchup, how they go about it. You know the Sun defense, it'll be there. They'll make it tough for Kelsey. They're going to make it tough for Caitlin. But score is score, and they're going to get their shots, and eventually they're going to start going down. But on the flip side of that, the Indiana Fever scare me as well. One, because of a young coach like Christy Sides, who's still struggling with her rotations and coaching decisions at the end. Christy Wallace, who hasn't played since before the Olympic break, was all of a sudden brought into the game. Another liability I'm worried about is Nalissa Smith. Does her relationship with Dejounte, does that affect her play? Is her head in the game? What Nalissa Smith are we getting? What AB do we get? What Aaliyah Boston do we get in the playoffs? Do we get 20-10, double-double Aaliyah? Or do we get that Aaliyah Boston that's scared, that plays scary? I know Caitlin's a rookie, but I'm not really worried about a player like that. I'm worried about how a rookie coach handles a player like Caitlin. I have some news for everybody that's been watching and following the Indiana Fever so far this season. Caitlin's not passing up all those shots and passing as much as she did in the regular season. We know how great players get when it's crunch time. Making the right play is always important, but there are those others that go out and do it themselves. And we know the minute Caitlin starts to get frustrated with her teammates and missing layups and not making the right play, she gets frustrated with them and they get on her short leash. With all that being said, I do believe that the Indiana Fever have the capabilities to upset a team in the first round. And as long as it's not the Aces, the Lynx, or the Liberty, I think Caitlin gets out of the first round. I'm a big believer in experience, and people that know me know that I'm not saying the Indiana Fever are going to win this year, because I think everyone has to go through the fire to come out. And I just hate when people expect the team to win in the playoffs because of their regular season success. In all major sports, whether we're talking NHL, NBA, NFL, MLB, history has shown us that experience matters. So I won't jump out of the window, but if the standings stay the way they are, I think the Fever get out of first round. I want to stay with the Hawkeye theme and move to the Iowa Hawkeyes football team, who shit the bed against our rivals Iowa State in a 20-19 loss in Kinnick. Down two, ISU got the ball back with 29 seconds left, drove the ball down the field for 42 yards for their kicker to convert on the 54-yard field goal. I think everyone watching that game saw us punt that last offensive drive and had PTSD flashbacks. I think everybody went through their GTA meme, said, "Oh shit, here we go again." And since nobody else wants to say it, I will. Kirk Ferentz is a benefactor of Phil Parker's genius, and it's time to send him off on a farewell tour this season. You never had a Brian Ferentz problem. You had a Kirk Ferentz problem. Everybody was mad at Brian and learned he got it from his daddy. For those that don't know, a coordinator's job, an offensive coordinator's job, is to creatively execute a game plan designed by the coach. And this definition isn't from Webster, so follow me. Kirk has a meeting every week, probably every day, and he sits with his coordinators and explains how he wants things to run on the offensive side. How many runs, how many passes, how he wants to manage the game clock. It is now the offensive coordinator's job to desperately draw up the most basic and plain plays to execute that weak-ass plan. And I'm sick of it. I'm really sick of it. You know, if developing tight ends, defensive backs, and linebackers to play at the next level is the ultimate goal, then cool. I'll sit back and shut up. But I also want you fans to know that comes with complacency, mediocrity, and just the unwillingness to adjust to the evolution of football. One of my mentors and favorite people in the world, current head coach of the St. Lawrence Vikings, I had this argument with him. I wouldn't call it an argument, but more a debate about the structure and instability of the Hawkeye program if you fire a guy like Kirk. The Hawkeyes have the same problem the Bears had, and they want to continue to live and eat off of legacy. And legacy only. Hey, Floyd Mayweather went 50-0, and he kept telling y'all it wasn't about belts. You cannot eat off of legacy. I do not care about a rebuild of a program, whether it takes 2, 3, 4 years of rebuilding. I do not care. My entire tenure at Iowa and after, Nebraska stunk. But they rebuilt that program from the ground up. And to be honest with you, I damn near rather be a Nebraska Husker than an Iowa Hawkeye right now. At least Nebraska is getting with the times. They looked at the best quarterback in the world and recruited a biracial brother cosplaying as Patrick Mahomes that's playing right now under center. Kirk Ferentz has openly been against the transfer portal, and the first thing he gives when he goes into the transfer portal is $1 million to a guy who can't throw more than 30 yards. And he ends up getting suspended for it. Hey, I'll tell you one thing. Those phony Big Ten championship appearances that everybody was so excited for, those days are over. There's no more Big Ten East, Big Ten West, only having to worry about the Wisconsin Badgers. Those days are over. Has anybody ever been to a black church? And there's a pastor that's been there since the beginning. I'm talking about the groundwork. Like, you go back to the history photos of that church, and he's in front of the building with a shovel and a ribbon. But he's 90 years old now, and he comes to church preaching about absolutely nothing. Just keeps giving you the same word and scripture every single Sunday. His church members are coming there and leaving with nothing new that they learned. That is what it feels like to be an Iowa Hawkeye fan. And you people from Iowa are just so happy with mediocrity, and I do not understand why. It is Iowa. Davenport, Cedar Rapids, Marion, Bettendorf, Muscatine, Des Moines, Albia, Mount Pleasant. These Iowans aren't going anywhere. There's nothing there but the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones. And the people that live in Iowa pick some random team from the Midwest, like the St. Louis Rams, to become their favorite team because they can't cheer for anybody. Nobody's going anywhere or taking their fandom somewhere else. Nobody's leaving because you won 6 games instead of 8 this year. I promise you, Kinnick will still be sold out and tailgates will still be happening just because they won 6 games instead of 9. Nobody's losing sleep over it. I love Kirk. Some great seasons during my tenure at Iowa, but it's time for him to retire and move to his lake house in North Carolina. You'll forever be loved in Iowa, known as one of the greatest coaches in Iowan history, and your impact will never be forgotten. You'll be up there with Hayden Fry in the pregame images and videos that we throw up for the Hawkeye history. You'll be right up there with them. Plenty of memories to post up there for you. But it's time for a new identity and a new legacy in Iowa City. Period. Sticking with football, NFL season is back, and I hit on none of my parlays. You gotta love it. But what I loved even more, my guy Justin Fields and the Steelers took on the new look Falcons with Kirk Cousins behind center. And Steelers pulled away late with an 18-10 win over the Falcons in Atlanta. Felt like a home game for the Steelers. I've been following Justin because I'm a big fan of his, so I've been following a lot more of Steelers Nation. I did not know you guys traveled like that. Felt like a Steelers home game. Probably 70% Steeler Nation. But they went into Atlanta, pulled away with an 18-10 win over the Falcons, where Chris Boswell scored all 18 points via 6 made field goals. And I know some of you all are going to go, Justin only threw for 156 yards. It was a terrible week for all quarterbacks week one. I think only two passes threw for over 300 yards. I think it was Stafford and Tua. Listen, I know you want your QB to get into the end zone, but besides the first Steelers drive, I think Justin played really well. That first drive, he made me mad by fumbling that first step. And to be honest with you, I thought maybe bro might be cooked. That very first drive was very lackadaisical from him, very demure, I might say. It was a tough watch. But after them first few drives, he settled in, and I thought he controlled the pace of the game really well. Especially in that second half, he converted on four third downs with his legs running. He rushed for 57 yards, threw the ball 17 for 23, 156 yards. And if not for a terrible offensive pass interference call on Pickens, he throws for over 200 yards, and Pickens has a 100-yard receiving day. If you're listening to this and you're a Steelers fan, I don't think you have to worry about Justin getting the ball to Pickens. DJ Moore had his best career year with Fields as his quarterback. Targets and play designs were not an issue for DJ. I think we could really be looking at something even better because Pickens fits Justin's play style a little better. Pickens is a deep ball threat guy. And what's Justin's greatest strength? His deep ball. Pause. The scheme around Justin was beautiful. And I think Arthur Smith even said after the game that they're going to open the playbook more. Didn't really want to attack the middle of the field because of safeties like Jesse Bates and Justice Simmons, which is understandable. Justin probably wasn't even ready to start week one. I think Russell Friday afternoon stated an issue with his calf, and that's when they kind of pivoted towards the game plan for Justin. So considering all that was happening leading up to Sunday, I think he played really well. There were plays drawn up for Justin Luke Getsy could only dream of in his sleep. Whether it was rollouts, play actions, RPOs, Justin looked comfortable. He looked like he was in a system that was built for him. And I personally think he continues to get better every year, every week. A coach like Mike Tomlin and an organization like Pittsburgh just might be able to revive my guy's career. And also another thing, that defense is disgusting. Hey, TJ Watt might be the best player in the NFL not named Patrick Mahomes. Moving on to the Bears. The Chicago Bears had their first game of the regular season at home versus the Tennessee Titans. After the first half, I thought to myself, oh no, we suck again. And to be honest with you, we were really saved by Will Levis playing like a jackass. After being down 17-3 at halftime, Bears rallied back with a defensive touchdown from Stevenson that gave us the lead late in the fourth, and a special teams TD at the beginning of the third quarter that was blocked and returned by Jonathan Biles. Bears also converted on two field goals from Santos in the fourth that kind of put it away and got Caleb his first NFL victory. Caleb, not the most impressive debut, finished 14 of 29, didn't crack 100 yards with only 93, no touchdowns, zero interceptions. A lot of missed throws, a lot of passes batted down. Six passes batted down, and that scares me. I don't think his height will be a factor, but batted passes usually comes down to a QB locking his eyes on one specific receiver, and what I think that's something you can fix and work on as the season progresses. So I'm not too worried about that. I think he can and will play a lot better. With that being said, I mean, he didn't turn the ball over. He wasn't reckless. And most importantly, he didn't look rattled or rushed in the pocket. Like, obviously, he took some sacks. That 19-yard sack loss was atrocious. But besides a few plays and a couple sacks taken, he didn't look uncomfortable. He didn't look rattled. It didn't look like the moment was too big for him. He still did drive us down the field twice to get those two field goals in the fourth quarter. We play the Texans this week, this upcoming Sunday. And I'm not going to lie, I'm very nervous. However, I think this is a good test for our DBs. Run defense has always been solid and not too worried about it, to be honest. But if you remember last year, we struggled in the pass defense, especially against elite quarterbacks. And this week, it gets no easier as we take on CJ Stroud, and he has a bunch of weapons. Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, in my opinion, the best wide receiver on that team, Tank Dell. Joe Mixon, who we might have messed up by letting Mixon go to the Texans with that passing prowess. I mean, what you can't you're not sticking eight in a box, because as soon as you stick eight in a box, I'm gonna have my three wide receivers cook up one on one. They also have a very good tight end, one of my favorite tight ends in the league, Dalton Schultz, who I think is going to be one of those guys that comes along late in the season, becomes a reliable check down for CJ as the season gets on and teams learn how to defend Nico, Diggs, and Tank on the outside. Very interested to see. While we're still talking about the Bears, I just wanted to, I know Hard Knocks ended, but I'm also going to say this if nobody else will. Hard Knocks was trash this year. And that hurts my heart to say. I felt like it was very PG-13. I've never gotten so much access to the preseason games. I felt like it was more preseason game footage, you know, then there was actually training camp footage and inside Hallis Hall footage. And we had to hear about Simone Biles and Jonathan Biles every week. We didn't hear or see anything about the fights that took place during training. Well, nobody's watching Hard Knocks for preseason footage. I can watch the preseason if I want to watch preseason footage. I think McCaskey has some pull, man, because whatever he said and whatever he did had them scared to really show what Hard Knocks is about. I think the best part, only vulnerable part really, was when Adrian Colbert got released and the ACL tear of Ian Willer. It was difficult to watch. Good footage, good content, but they Hard Knocks dropped the ball. This season was trash. It is what it is. I appreciate y'all for tuning in to another episode here at Razor Sharp Sports Network. This past weekend had me excited. Football was back. Weather in Chicago was like low 60s. Had layers on layers. And I get my best fits off in the fall and winter time. I'm excited football is back and hoping for successful seasons for Chicago sports this fall. Always remember, go Bears, go Bulls, go Sox, stay sharp, and always remember, fuck the Cubs.